I wonder if anyone's had suspension of actually, and I know they have suspension of disbelief of My Little Pony. I'm like, that's how internet arguments start amongst bronies.
Everyone, to another episode of Fangs and Fonts. I'm Ocean.
I'm Voice.
I'm Yanara.
And Roland is flying back from FC right now and has given us notes from the plane that he almost killed himself on.
Notes from beyond the plane.
He almost killed himself on the plane.
Yeah, look at his note. I nearly missed my plane and nearly killed myself running for it. Bye, love.
Wait, didn't this happen for RF
yes,
too?
It did.
This is why I wrote next to it, classic Roland.
And then Cheetah wrote, no surprise Cheetah either.
Well,
so, I don't know if he'll suddenly show up at the end of this. Probably not. Maybe he'll just record something and edit it in, because this is his podcast edit. But today's episode, we're talking about suspension of disbelief. Because we've all been there when you're reading a book and you're starting to get into it, and then one stupid little detail just suddenly throws you right out, or you have to go research something, or you're a gun enthusiast and they said clip instead of magazine.
Thank you, Sparf.
Or they gave a cheetah rosettes.
We all have our little bits. I also noted here for Roland that, you know, who counts bullets? So.
It's a six shooter, then why did you have eight shots?
How did he fire seven?
Shut up.
Well, it's like we were just discussing with the cheetah from Zootopia not having the teardrops.
Which just kind of doesn't make it look like a cheetah to me. At all.
Suspension of disbelief.
Fuck the tail.
So. What is suspension of disbelief?
I like how you're looking at me to explain it.
Well, you're usually the one that pulls up the document.
I don't have the document up.
Wow, for once you're not prepared. Usually you're like, well, Wikipedia or dictionary says.
Well, suspension of disbelief.
Pause for dramatic effects.
I'll race you.
Belief.
Suspension of disbelief, or willing suspension of disbelief, is a term coined in 1817 by the poet and ascetic philosopher Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who suggested that if a writer could infuse a human interest and a semblance of truth into a fantastic tale, the reader would suspend judgment concerning the details.
So in layman's terms...
How good can you fake it?
It's based...
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so basically, when you are reading a story or watching a movie... It is. I'm bleeding.
My suspension of disbelief is blown now.
I'm just like, I have blood on my hands.
It wasn't me.
Anyway, that was good. So basically, it is when you are reading a book or watching a movie, when you come to a point where you basically, it's allowing you to immerse yourself into the story. It's when you basically suddenly start reading the story and believe that, you know, the fact that there's dragons in the story, it's okay. You believe it because you have suspended your disbelief. Like Harry Potter, for example. When you're reading through a Harry Potter book, a lot of things that happen in Harry Potter, you accept because...
Wizard did it!
Rowling's
you assume magic can happen.
Yeah, Rowling's has set forward a set of rules and whatnot that makes magic plausible and ultimately horrific if you know where to look. And you basically, it doesn't stop you in your tracks. Whereas if she hadn't set that up, you'd be reading along, a wizard would do something and you would stop dead. It would pull you out of the story as you're staring at it going, why the hell did this happen?
Eventually, your brain would catch up with you and you'd realize you're reading a wizard story, but still.
But we'll get into that later. I was going to get onto the topic of magic and whatnot.
A wizard did it.
But in a sense, it's that bridge that we allow ourselves to accept the world and enhance our imaginations enough that we are believing what we're reading, to a sense.
That moment where we don't let reality impede upon what we know is otherwise.
Mm-hmm. We're realizing this is not reality. This is not the world we live in, except for maybe a slice of life.
Yeah.
But then there is a suspension of disbelief in that too.
Yeah.
But we're given this world and we accept the rules that have been given to us about it And so we immerse ourselves in that world, and we suspend our disbelief that this can't exist. Because as soon as you stop and go, well, this can't actually happen. Magic doesn't exist in this world, or dragons don't exist, or this isn't the future. Then we're no longer in the world. We're no longer enjoying the story for what it is.
That happens a lot in LARPing, actually. Because to have a level of suspension of disbelief. Well, for one, you're playing a giant make-believe game. Two, you have to pretend that the referees are bumblebees, and you don't see them, and you don't hear them, even though they're talking about plot points behind you. And if you let yourself go back into the reality of those interactions, you lose a lot. And it's, unlike a book, I think it's harder to get back into the suspension of disbelief when it's a real-life moment versus a story. Because you can always read back a few pages in your story and put yourself back into the setting. Whereas real life, as adults, we've completely eradicated our ability to make believe.
Well, if you want to go even to furry culture, there's the, you know, don't break the magic, don't take off your head in public.
Don't take your head off, don't talk. Some of them even go so far as that.
But yeah, you know, we accept when people are in a costume or cosplaying that is the character. We suspend our disbelief because we know this character doesn't actually exist, that there's a human being behind it.
We want it to exist.
But yeah, we allow it. We give the magic, like anytime you go to the circus or something as well.
Anytime you go to Disneyland.
Theater is the same thing, right?
Yeah.
You're always in character. There's, you know, you don't want to break that magic.
Because as soon as you do, it takes people, and in some cases it can take... It, and then we'll get into this later on in the podcast, but sometimes it depends on the situation and the person. Sometimes that's a real hard thing to do for people to get back into a storyline, depending on who they are or how to get that suspension of disbelief back once it's broken.
So what are some things that can happen in a story that will break the suspension of disbelief for you?
So are you looking for specific examples, or are you looking for situations?
Generic but specific examples work as well. Like if you have one specifically in mind from a story that most people know or something.
I think my favorite, or the most atrocious one for me, is the horror trope that you really have to suspend disbelief for this to happen, is everybody splits up.
That the actions that people take in a horror movie are illogical?
Yes! I mean, humans are basically herd animals. Basic monkey instincts. Shit's going down. We have to mass together as a group because it's harder to take off 20 people versus take off one person, and eventually you can overwhelm the mob.
But on that point, as Yanis pointed out at RF this year or last year, you think most people watching a horror film will go, well, that guy's not going to go off on his own. But if there's like a bunch of us and there's it's the middle of the night, a noise happens, a bunch of us are going to want to stick together, while one or two people are going to be like, well, no, I've got this table leg, I've got this, I'm going to go find out what this
is. That's the rarity. The generic reaction is to stick together. Not everybody split up.
When things are in a panic state, you don't always know how people will react. And there have been psychological studies on this as well. There's the most famous one that they're not allowed to recreate because of ethics, where in the experiment... The person, they did this to experiment on the mindset of like people in the Holocaust, like the guards in the Holocaust, if I recall right.
I know the one you're talking about.
And they would have a person that would come in and they're like, okay, there's another person in a room and you'll just crank the dial and just turn it up. And then you would turn it up and they were like, ow, you're just giving them a shock. It's okay. Turn it up more. And they would just tell you until the person would be like, please stop, and then stop responding because you've killed them. And then the person in the coat, in the lab coat, would just be like, continue. That would be all they say. And it shows that, you know, anyone would be like, well, I can't shoot a person or kill someone.
But yet, here you are.
But when someone of some sort of command or authority just tells you to do it, you just kind of, sometimes you may mindlessly do it, even though you don't realize it.
Well, there was... experiment that happened in the university that was very similar.
Are you talking about the cops in
the
jail?
Prison?
Yeah, that's another
one. Where it was like at the end, the cops were so corrupt, and these are just normal kids, and they would go into that situation and become these sadistic people.
They would believe those are the roles they have.
Yeah.
And start to fill the
boots. Then when they left again, they were just, they'd revert back, and it came to the point where the teacher realized he was starting to fulfill a role, and he was no longer...
He was being like an overseer.
Yeah, and then that's when he stopped it.
Like, the only way you're going to know how you react is when you're actually put in that situation without you knowing. Like, you're in a store, and someone fires off a gun and says it's a robbery.
Yeah,
funny. Are you going to group together, or are you going to get the fuck out of there?
Funny thing about that, been there, done that.
Most not everybody
people,
has.
Yeah, most people.
Did everyone together. Group together and band together?
Yeah, pretty much. Everyone sort of grouped together and hid in the same spot.
Hid.
Yeah, that made things more difficult, but they didn't. No one ran separate ways. No one split up.
Well,
could they?
Or was the person blocked off the exit?
No, there was an option to escape.
Yeah. So that's one instance.
It is, but, you know. I don't know many other people who've been personally in an instance like that. So
if we want, we could look to graphic details that have happened in the recent past, but I don't think we need to bring that up.
Well, there was that one shooting where, the guy ran towards the gunman and got shot, but still disabled the guy.
You can't always just say this is how things will be.
No, but it's still one thing that, as a person who has experienced incidences like this, that... Like I said, you ask, what takes you out of the story? Well, what breaks my suspension of disbelief is everyone going, let's split up, because that's a great fucking idea. That's my suspension of disbelief. That is my example because of what I have experienced.
We need to investigate clues.
I hate that game. Mm-hmm. Well, what would someone else's example be of something that takes you out? Like, you know, like I said, you know, your own personal issue. You know, action, guns. I mean, I don't know very much about guns, which is why I try to avoid writing with them.
When someone writes an action scene and I'm wondering how
anyone can
do these actions without being a contortionist. A lot of action scenes, I just kind of have to go, what? And then
why are you doing that to me?
Like, you know when you get in that groove of reading, you're just kind of like, it's almost like you're skimming across the surface. You're still reading, but you're just in this mood where you're just moving along, and then you hit something, you're just like, now you have to read it word for word.
Because you've been thrown right out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there.
When you start hearing your voice in your head, because you're just like, you're right, it's like, it's just railed you enough that you're just like, I am now reading every word by its...
Slightly off topic, when you read a story by an author you know, like one of us, or like, you know, do you read it in their voice?
No.
Oh. I do that.
I make up voices.
But for me, when I come across something that is just ridiculous, like someone receiving a fist-sized hole through their chest and regenerating it by eating a bunch of candy.
It's good candy.
That is a very specific response that people who know me and my hatred for this book, or great dislike for this book, I should say, will know. But recently, one that took me out is I just started reading Dark Disciple by Christy Golden, which is a bunch of Clone Wars episodes done in a book. And it's a bunch of Jedi talking, and Obi-Wan said something that threw me off, and it just seemed out of character. And then every word I was reading by itself, and I realized
right,
I was...
out.
Well, I realized I was stuck in it and was like, what the hell?
Sometimes I'll skim over those. If I get too frustrated with it, I'll just do a quick skim. I'll no longer absorb what I'm reading because I'm frustrated with it.
So you guys have written down that you believe it's genre specific?
Well, we wrote down, is it genre specific? And then proceeded to go, yes. Yes, it is.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I don't think it's genre specific as much as genres have specific things that will push.
Ooh, I like that.
Genres
have specific things that will allow.
Yeah, I like, again, in a fantasy, I'm assuming like a high fantasy with magic, because you could have like a medieval fantasy instead.
Yeah.
You know, you're expecting magic, or dragons, or, you know, whatever else is in there.
You're expecting the wizard did it.
Yeah. So those aren't the things that would push you out. But if I'm... you know, reading a slice of life, and then in the end it's like, well, now I will cast my spell and she will be under me. Suddenly I'm like, wait, what? I wasn't expecting this, you know, unless it was actually an urban fantasy, but it's certain set things that I think will push it in some genres and not the other.
Yeah, and usually with an urban fantasy, those declare right at the get-go that this is not your everyday neighborhood.
Yeah, we're not doing some M. Shyamalan, suddenly the past is modern.
They're threes!
They're dead, something like that.
Yeah, I just finished reading a... Oh, here's a good example of something that would take you out for suspension of disbelief. I recently read an urban fantasy, which I attempted to become a slice of life sort of thing. So I was just reading the book, and then suddenly they're mentioning Inuyasha in there. And they're mentioning, you know, the new Star Wars movies in the theater. And I'm like, how old is this book?
Actually, that is something...
And that took me right up, because I'm not used to writers referencing cultural things that clearly.
That's something that it irks me a little. I know for some people it isn't, some people it is. But when you're reading something in an anthro universe, do you find it weird when they're mirroring our own? Like, if you're writing an anthro universe and, you know, Bob the Ferret is talking to Jim the Cheetah and they're like, man, did you see what Obama's new bill says?
See,
I find that
it kind
weird.
Of, yeah, it's a little when, jarring. Like, it's not bad, but
when it pulls in modern things like, oh, so and so is playing their Xbox, yes. But weirdly enough, if they've tweaked it to fit in an anthro world and kind of poke fun at the modern world, it doesn't faze me at all.
Like, an X-Pause.
Yeah, like, it's just, yeah, like, I just read
that.
Over it and I'm just like, da 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 da, that's hilarious. Keep continuing.
Like, the Starbucks is Starbucks and it's a deer.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that.
It's not a mermaid, it's a deer. I like
Though,
that.
Or Anonymous.
Like, yeah, I'm usually okay with those puns. I don't like them as names, but I know some people do. I always get really annoyed at those. Mick Jaguar or
yeah.
You know, whatever.
Okay, that's bad.
That's why it throws me out, because you're just like, it's a groaner.
It is. It's a dad joke. It's a total dad joke.
But I do find it, like, if you're going to pick one, or if you're going to do one, pick one and stay with it, because I get really annoyed when they're talking about, oh, I saw the new James Bond movie and it had Daniel Craig in there and I really miss Judi Dench. Let's go play on my X-Pause.
Yeah.
And you're like,
don't throw that one thing in and then skip the rest.
Yeah, they'll merge some and then use real life, and that is something that will throw me out.
See, and this book did really good for that. I mean, I was expecting that one or two things being thrown in there. But all in all, this urban fantasy did really good in incorporating a type of slice of life to it. You know, the kid had Skechers. They played with the Inuyasha comic books at the same point when, you know, they crossed over into the part of the world where they live, where the magic is. The reason one of the boys loves the Inuyasha book so much is because he's a changeling. And it just kind of goes back and forth and incorporates that. You know, they leave the place where the magic is to go to the library to use the internet to see how much they're going to trade a gold doubloon for. And it just... It worked really well, and I think she did a really good job on it, especially given, you know, some of her earlier works were a little jarring.
But going back to the
genre-specific,
that's actually a good point. There are certain tropes that fit within a certain genre that you expect...
And allow,
and that's why you end up getting a lot of people who, say, a hardcore Star Trek fan who sits there and loves the documents and loves... You know, all the science behind Star Trek, who turns around and goes, well, I tried to get into Star Wars, but couldn't. Well, because a lot of the stuff in Star Wars, their science is a pseudoscience / it's a space opera. So, you know, who cares how a lightsaber works? It works!
It's a crystal! It's magic!
The electrical engineer is like, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the mathematician PhD is like that... There is no way, there's no formula.
And
that
goes for the hardcore, the hard science sci-fiers who can't do Star Trek or Star Wars because, again...
It's not hard sci-fi.
It's not hard sci-fi.
All I can think of now is that song by Voltaire.
And, you know, being IT with computers, we just laugh at like, oh, I'm hacking into the database.
Yeah.
And you're just like, pat, pat.
You're being cute.
Yeah.
See, would that be...
You hear about those new chips? They're faster than a Pentium.
An interesting way of identifying points of suspended disbelief in genres is see what people have satired, because that's usually what they pick out. Like with Last Action Hero,
yeah,
They make the joke about, you know, just fire. Well, how do we reload? We don't ever reload. We have all the bullets we want, you know, and he like hits the glove box and guns just pour out. They're like, this is a movie. We don't care about that.
Very true.
Sounds like an 18 movie.
Yeah, when people mock horror movies and they do horror movie spoofs, they're all like, you know, let's all stick together. No, that would be stupid. Why would we do that?
They did that on a Halloween centric car insurance commercial on TV. We should hide. Well, I know. Let's hide in that broken down shed there with all those rusty knives. Or we could get in this car that's right here beside us running.
And drive away.
Nah, let's go hide in the shed. Exactly. Shh, do you hear him? He's coming. Do you hear him? Is he coming? I don't know. And meanwhile, the killer's standing beside them with the chainsaw, shaking his head. And then I don't remember the name of the car commercial company, which is probably counterproductive to their marketing, but whatever. And they got, you know, car insurance. Some things just make more sense than others. I'm like, okay, that's hilarious.
And that's very true, is that each genre tends to have its own things that end up holding that suspension of disbelief, which is weird in the case of you can have stories where you don't have those tropes and they'll still allow you to suspend disbelief, but in some cases it actually might make it harder for people to suspend disbelief while reading it because those familiar points aren't in there.
Another reason I'm going to say it's not genre specific is that you can write a character and the character, you can build up this character and then have the character do an action that you would read and go, no, I don't believe that. The character that you have given me would not make that choice or not say that.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be another form of suspension of disbelief.
That's true.
No, I really like
breaking
how,
the system. Sorry.
Yeah, I really like how you had stated it earlier, is that genres do not allow for suspension of disbelief. We allow automatically for suspension of disbelief because of the genre is expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
I hope they have the right name for it. One of the things I thought was really interesting, and it's really done well with that off-putting feel for suspension of disbelief and kind of succeeding but failing, is Blindsight by Peter Kleins, because he went out to write a story where it's your typical sci-fi story where they meet an alien race that is basically beyond our comprehension. And in doing so, he had to come up with a way of how mankind can travel through space in suspended animation. And in that, he included vampires. And you kind of, he mentions it and you're like, the hell's going on? But he explains it in such a way that you just kind of accept it. But it's always kind of there where you're just like, this fits, but this doesn't. But as soon as the aliens show up, your suspension of disbelief is constantly at war with itself over these aliens, because there's things where you're like, this exists in the story, but at the same point, it's off enough that it's creating this discordant feeling that is throwing off all your sensors, which is just making the alien seem that much more alien. I don't know. Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Roland's going to think I said something. I didn't do anything at all this time.
It was totally me this time.
But, yeah.
But we allow those things. You know, we just accept them because, you know, we're not looking for the most realistic thing, usually, when we're suspending our disbelief. You know, I went with my mom and watched the newest James Bond movie, Spectre. And, you know, we enjoyed it. And afterwards, we're just like, you know, when you sit back and just realize how silly everything going on is, you just kind of chuckle and then just go back and enjoy the rest of the film.
Sounds like The Incredibles. Or not Incredibles, sorry. Actually,
leave your brain at the door.
Yeah, it's a kind. Well, it's kind of a...
Expendables.
Expendables, there we go. Yeah, it's kind of like The Expendables.
Yeah, it's a satire on action films to some many degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But you go in there and it's funny how much people love movies like that because all the tropes are there, all the things are there, and yeah, turn your brain off at the door and
Michael Bay explosions.
Now to go back to saying, is it genre specific? I think there are some genres in which suspension of disbelief is given more leeway. Given like the old pulps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I find, you know, we look back at them now and almost consider them corny because of what's going on, but that was just almost a staple of the genre.
I would think movies like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Bunraku would be among that.
Yeah,
like Japanese anime as
anime. I was just saying, like, even the live action movies.
But even when you go into, you see a kung fu movie like that, it's almost, you're almost thrown if there isn't wire work in it, if there isn't really well choreographed fight scenes.
Yeah, but those are ones you go into with the expectation, you know, you're already prepared to suspend all the disbelief.
On the flip side, everyone loved Bruce Lee so much because he, you know, he was actually doing most of those things. Yeah. So that you didn't, it was more unbelievable than suspension of disbelief because it's just like, wow.
It was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So one of the things that I wanted to touch on is, as I had mentioned, when we are kids, when we're young, it's really easy for us to suspend disbelief. Mostly because we are in that state of make-believe a lot of the times as we're exploring the world. You know, your paper tubes are still lightsabers. You know,
Come on, let's face it. Anybody who still works retail, even as a 30-year-old, your paper tube is still a lightsaber. I'm going to get to that. Okay, sorry.
You have your race car box, you know, your spaceships and all that out of refrigerator boxes. And basically, you have all these things where, you know, and you end up getting reading these stories and you end up watching these movies. And as a kid, you're not looking for plot points. You're not looking for plot holes. You're not looking for characters behaving a certain way. I mean, you'll still pick up on them as a kid, but for the most part, suspension of disbelief is easy for you. As we get older, we end up... It gets harder for us to suspend disbelief. As Jan had said, we stop playing make-believe a lot of the time. I mean, yes, we do still, you know, you give people in retail tubes and you leave them alone without a manager and they're going to end up sword fighting with them.
Or halogen lights.
Well, hopefully not halogen lights because those are toxic to breathe when they're broken. But, or even just out in camping with flashlights, they'll still have, you know, in smoke, you'll still have people who pretend they're lightsabers. But as far as it comes to our reading and to our TV watching and our movies, there has to be a lot more work put into it for us to be able to suspend the disbelief. Because as soon as we have those one thing, two things, or three things that just break us out of there, we can't just easily go back into it. We have to sit there, you know, at the end of the movie going, well, what about this part? I totally didn't understand why this happened, you know, during the new Star Wars movie. Why did this happen? This makes no sense. Let's go super analyze it online. And it's... Where was
I going with this? I agree.
Well, what my question is, does this mean that writing kid lit is easier? Because that expectation of things have to make sense, your audience isn't necessarily looking for it?
I don't think so. I think you should be writing a good story regardless. I think regardless of the genre, you should be trying to fill in as many plot holes as possible.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I agree wholeheartedly. I think you should put your all into any kind of literature, and it should make sense to pretty much any age that's reading
it. If you're writing something for a 3-year-old to read where it's like, oh, there's a balloon at the zoo. Where could the balloon be? Well, there's not even really a plot, you know, so...
I found the loophole on this one!
The elephant was holding the balloon. Yay! Yeah, okay, well, I understand, but as soon as you start to get into something with an actual plot arc and structure, and if to just say that, well, it's a kid's book and as an excuse for laziness.
Yeah, which, no, and I agree. There comes a certain point, a certain age, I mean, books have to make sense, but at the same point, they don't have to make sense. But yeah, as soon as you have actual plots, actual character development, and, you know, say YA, then I mean, I'm just bringing this point up, but I also agree that you have to put a certain amount of effort into it, A, to write a good story, and B, because you are going to have to end up having to suspend disbelief for people who are probably getting into that age where they're starting to notice that, you know, if your character doesn't behave a certain way that you've made them expect he's supposed to act, it's going to pull them out of the story, and they're going to set it down. Too. Would they, though?
Would depends you think, on the age group you're referring to always, specifically, because you do have
calling you for something.
Well, and once you get out of the young adult readers and into the more pernicious young adult readers, they get really, I want to put this delicately, opinionated and mouthy. They challenge everything, because at that point they're discovering that they don't have to say what they're expected to say, and they have their own opinion and they want to make it heard. It's a fun couple years. And I just think that would be the age group that would call you out on something that just wouldn't be right in one of your stories.
It's possible.
I know people of all ages that'll do that.
That's true.
You know, there's always going to be those people who want to call you out on your mistakes and whatnot.
Mm. You're always going to make a mistake that someone's going to call you out on. So what do you do about it then?
Light them on fire. Who cares? Go ahead.
Well, the prime one is one that we've talked about on a number of occasions. Research. This, in some cases, comes across, is needed more than others. We've made the statement before that, you know, if you don't do your research, there's always going to be that one reader who catches your mistake and calls you on it. But if you're writing historical literature, or you're writing alternative history literature, know your facts, do your research, know your setting. Because, A, if you get something wrong, someone's going to call you on it and it's going to pull them out of the story. But B, the better you do it, the more immersive that experience is going to be, which is actually one of the things I'm finding with Assassin's Creed, where it's just the amount of historical research that's gone into it is amazing.
I'm thinking of the suspension of disbelief that you keep having to put through in that video game when you dive off the tower.
Okay, barring the leaps of faith.
Into the ever-holding sack of hay. I'm just going to throw all these bodies in this hay bale and no one will notice.
Yeah, actually.
That's the thing, not the, I have special vision that can outline the target and the innocence and the...
I liked the hay bale of holding.
I love the fact that when I finished 2, it was like, oh look, it's all the conspiracy theories that I've already known. Ooh, there's nothing new for me here.
They did a fine job on the conspiracies. I'll give them that. The thing that actually made me interested was the conspiracy theories. But
again, it's one of those things where it's they've created this world, and just like your stories and whatnot, if you're doing something that involves history or actual events, even if you're going to fictionalize parts of it, you have to know what the history is and what they're doing. If you're doing science fiction, even space opera, you've got to know some of the technology that you're throwing into this and to kind of evolve from there, or you're going to have people who are going to be upset at it. Warp drives is one of those ones that I don't.
Yeah.
Aren't we making warp drives right now?
Well, it harkens back to, I was reading this book called How to Write Fantasy and Science Fiction. And I can't remember who the author was, but one of the things they did in there is he was talking about writing science fiction. And he said, you know, he basically sits there and calls out all the Star Trek books as bullshit and terrible writing because they have warp drives. He then goes, well, I'm sure you're all sitting there reading this thinking, man, I would love to have a couple Star Wars books Star Trek books under my belt. Well, yeah, that would be awesome. But clearly his suspension of disbelief is broken by the warp drive, and he proceeds to sit there and talk about breaking the speed of light and all this stuff. And it's one of those things where it's like, it always fascinates me just how much people are sticklers for something like that. So, what are your guys' suggestions for stopping issues with suspension of disbelief?
Like you said, don't be lazy. Do your research. if you're not sure how something works or a culture or, you know, and there's so many cases of people rallying against this about, well, I wanted to write a disabled character, so I just assume this is what a disabled character is like without actually consulting. Or a certain race or, you know, a certain person in a social situation or...
Well, that's like, just tantamount to professional suicide.
I find you're when you're talking about writing a specific race, that just made me think of there was a Star Trek original series episode that was done where they went to a planet full of natives. And it is is one of the examples of the worst representation of Native Americans on TV.
It's because white people suck.
And it's nowadays looking back, it's hilarious. But back then, it was obviously more acceptable, and the suspension of disbelief was there.
I don't think it was acceptable. I think it was just blind ignorance. Because if you'd had asked any native at that point if it was acceptable, you probably would have been slapped.
I meant in general culture, though.
That's a culture.
Yes, but if it wasn't acceptable, they wouldn't have done it.
Yes, they would have.
No. Just like we said that Blazing Saddles would not be done nowadays.
No, that's true.
Because there's...
racism. Where they admit it,
the,
too.
The portraying of every single race they have in their...
Yes, I mean... as per this YouTube channel we're watching, Where You Take Chakotay, that is a far different bent on messing with the native culture than that Star Wars original series episode. So it's a case of back then it was more acceptable to do that, whereas in now times, I mean, if we did an episode now, it would be far different than, say, Chakotay versus that original episode.
I don't think that anyone would even actually try to do that episode now, just because they'd be so scared of having their pants fed to them.
Oh, yeah. But, it actually reminded me of something. Mark.
Sorry.
Actually, no. We don't have to mark this. One of the comments that Ray-chan made about my pulp story was... one of the things that broke the suspension of disbelief for him was how Jericho treated women. And even he admitted that it fit with the story, it fit with the timeline, fit with the character. It was just one of those things that for him broke his suspension of disbelief because he just couldn't mentally wrap his head around it. And I mean, that's another form of suspension of disbelief, because we've all picked those books where we just can't like the main character. We can't get with it. We can't, you know, we don't want to understand them. We just don't want anything to do with them. And generally those are the books we set down, because no one wants to devote 200 to 400 pages of characters they don't like.
In addition to research, whatever you are doing, talk to people who are involved in similar situations or roles. Do whatever you can to ask any questions. If you're writing something that obviously isn't slice of life, which is probably most things, so if in a fantasy or a sci-fi or even a superhero world, you need to identify the rules of that world. You may even want to write them down, which is why there's so many talks and books on how to create a magic system for your own world.
And that's actually one of the things that's very important is, I mean... you can have magic, and magic can do many amazing things, but if you don't have a system of checks and balances for your magic system, you're going to have a lot of people sitting going, well, this doesn't make any sense. The whole a wizard did it, you know, response means nothing.
Or just something like a Deus Ex
Machina. Does anyone know wizard?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's been a number of books that I've read where it's like, okay, that's a Deus Ex Machina ending. I've even wrote stories with Deus Ex Machina endings. Am I happy, proud of them? No. Because it breaks... I mean, it's a huge break of suspension of disbelief for me.
So how do you go about constructing your rules of a world?
I think it depends on... I mean, everything technically is based off of the real world. I mean, be it if I'm writing horror, science fiction... or something in the anthropomorphic. I mean, it's all based off of, in some ways, the world that we live in. And it's just a matter of how are things different? How are things the same? and then going off of that. I mean, especially in the case of, you had mentioned superhero fiction, superheroes, unless you're completely rewriting the world that it is, you're writing a world that is exactly the same as ours, only there's superheroes in it. Mm-hmm. And their impact on the people around them depends on how you're writing those superheroes. I mean, look how many, how few times people have tackled, okay, well, what happens after two superheroes fight and all the damage? How do they deal with it? You know, are there superhero cleanup crews? Are the people whose superpowers aren't really up to snuff for combat or turning into supervillains? Do they get paid to clean up stuff like that? Or are there, you know, super technological humans that do it?
Well, at the same time, you want, again, believable characters, even just the basics, right? Or else you start to get, even with going back to the superhero example, you can go to the childhood game of, well, I shoot a laser at you. Oh, well, I'm wearing laser-proof armor. Oh, well, my gun shoots through laser-proof armor.
Do you remember doing that as a kid, and you always wanted to beat that one guy up that did that?
Yes.
That was his point.
I'm sorry, I just...
But you don't, like, you can develop these characters, like Mary Sue's. Mary Sue's, I find, can break my suspension of disbelief when you're just like, there's no challenge. Why do I even... Is it? I might not be suspension of disbelief as much as just boredom, but the fact that you're like, how does this guy survive everything? You know,
well, it's clever about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's, yeah. I mean, that's why you. And I mean, you have to have believable flaws as well, because there's, you can give flaws.
So handsome. Oh no.
Well, that's the thing, is you can give flaws to a character that you may think are flaws, but they're not. Character flaws, like, you know, it's something that you're just like, oh yeah, clearly he's not aware of this thing that he has.
If they have a flaw, how does it hamper them throughout the story?
Yes, because it has to hamper them through the story.
Otherwise, my character could be deathly afraid of oranges, but if they never see an orange in the entire story, what was the point of it?
Exactly. Something that's brought up on the wiki in regards to suspension of disbelief is one of the most common examples of suspension of disbelief is language. Whereas in, they're usually like, it's always done in your native language. And if basically story or film or television series made in Anglophone countries, they'll have characters speak in English.
English.
Regardless of the linguistic environment of the narrative. However, when a foreign language appears, it's usually for dramatic effect. Now, in most cases, it's in, apparently in our modern...
Like your Icelandic?
Yes, like my Icelandic. Well, that's therein lies the thing, is whereas in, if it's just little words here and there, we're so used to it in our modern age, our suspension of disbelief basically goes... Yeah, that's normal. Whatever.
Well, I've run into that into a book I'm reading right now, and the only thing, like, the character is Spanish, but predominantly they've been speaking English throughout the book, and there's a few phrases that come up in Spanish, and I think the only thing that I've brought back from this is, huh, so that's how you spell bendejo.
So, but the thing is like, in cases where, like my one story with all the Icelandic, if it's huge hunks and it's out of place and it's not just a word here or a phrase there, it can completely remove your suspension of disbelief solely because, you know, it's something that's so unusual in the story. Mm-hmm. And it's not set in the current, you know, modern setting. Actually, one of the things you had mentioned with the how to solve it, we've said it before and we've said it again, beta readers. Because if your beta readers are reading it and they're like, oh, this, I don't believe this one bit, then they're going to end up, you know, that's usually a good sign to be like, hey, that doesn't work. I'm going to, you know, you're going to have to change it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth something going, you know, like what pulled you out? What doesn't you believe?
Well, something that you can even take in as like a personal note. I don't like reading this, so I'm not going to put that in my story.
What do you do about the scenario where you, say you even researched or you, something happened to you and you write something based on that, and a beta reader comes back and says, this would never happen.
That was my point.
I know. It's, I may realize it's on the document and we haven't mentioned it yet, which is why I'm bringing it up. So what do you do? Like, and I've heard stories about, well, this isn't how this works. And someone's like, we do that every Thursday night.
Yeah. No, which is why I was waving as frantically as the end was. And see, that's one of those situations where you kind of have to go, is this everyone, you know, is your one beta reader's reaction to it going to be everyone's reaction, or is that just your beta reader's reaction to it because of maybe inexperience or lack of understanding when it comes to that thing? Maybe they didn't, you know, take the 2 minutes it takes to Google research and go, hey, that is actually a thing, and you know, it's just something they've maybe never ever experienced. I've had that happen when I, with stories I've submitted to editors, where they've come back and said, this is unrealistic. And I've turned around and said, well, actually my friend did this and this happened and this and this. And, but it's something so unusual that, you know, I had to look at it and go, well, is the person reading the story going to be like, yeah, that's actually, you know, that's pretty neat, I should try that? Or is it going to be a case of they're going to feel the exact same way and go, that's not realistic?
Who the hell thinks of that shit?
Who the hell would ever do that?
Excuse me.
But that again fits in the context of what genre you're writing and the story you're writing and the audience you're writing for, because there's a lot of things that we write, say for furry fiction, that a lot of people who aren't writing or aren't used to reading furry fiction are going to look at and be like, the hell is this? That, you know, cat person has this and that and that? What? That makes no sense, and I am immediately pulled out of the story.
Well, if we've missed anything and that's pushed your suspension of disbelief of this podcast, please let us know. You can email us at fangsandfonts@gmail.com or get us on the Twitters or the Facebooks, Fangs and Fonts.
Facebook!
We'd love to hear any comments, suggestions, complaints, topic ideas, etc. from you guys.
And all that fun stuff.
Roland will be back next episode.
Which means we'll be far more livelier.
And he'll be editing this one.
He's lucky, isn't
he? Hi, Ferret.
Hey, Roland.
Lucky Ferret.
How you doing?
How was all your FC stuff?
Fucking con.
Running for planes. You really need a watch.
Otherwise, everybody have a good night.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Stopping recording now, Roland. Please edit this and have it out on time.